Okay, we got some weird chi going on here.
Zim zam zoodle. This is Capitis. Doss has Creek.
No. Today's episode is season 4, episode 17. Stop shaking your heads at me, you two so-and-sos. It's admissions. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Push that microphone away.
Zim zam zoodle, I said.
Hello, oh boy. Sarah.
Hello, Zam.
It's Zim and Zam, golfers in space.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to this episode that is going to be totally normal. Before we get into it, though, we're going to tell you what's happening on Patreon this weekend, dropping this Friday, October 17th. Our spoopy season miniseries continues with, again with this 259. Let's watch the Kevin Williamson scripted I Know What You Did Last Summer, the original 1997 one. You can rent or buy that on Amazon. We'll link it in the show notes. It's a time. It reunites or pre-unites our Cruel Intentions stars, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillippe. It lets the viewer know only blondes should date blondes and only brunettes should date brunettes. Just kidding. Mm-hmm. That is a factor in the movie. Lots to discuss. So join us if you can, again with this podcast.com/club.
You know what I hate about that movie?
What?
Is the fact that the title is the murderer talking to you. It's scary, just the title.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, every time I read it, it's him.
How did you feel about Nobody Beats the Wiz?
Good question.
Equally scared, but at not saving money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's start.
Wait. Any other first-person title deliveries we want to talk about? I'm gonna get you, sucker.
There is the TV show, I'm Sorry.
They Call Me Bruce.
Just one plot this week. Dave, keep that mic pushed away. Jen and Jack get into college. Joey gets into college. Dawson, not well so here, is back from college. When Jen trips into the cafeteria, Joey helps her in her noticeably defrizzed hair, which it looks so much better than the last two episodes, and I can't figure out how that is possible. Her real hair was clearly there. She could not grow that much hair so fast, but why did it look so shitty and much shorter in the previous two episodes? I do not get it.
I meant to look this up, actually, because there did seem to have been some growth, but I think they also de-blonded her a bit. I feel like we spent a lot of recap acreage back in the day begging various characters across networks to get a hot oil.
Yeah.
And she may have, like, there is a lot of product happening, but she could have also just defrizzed a little by going less blonde. That's how it does look here. And in subsequent episodes, like, some lowlights came in and helped.
See, I think the really shitty looking hair from the ski trip and the one after that was a wig. I just don't understand why. It doesn't make sense in the timeline.
No. You're wig cop, so I defer to you on that, but I don't understand why either.
Anywho, they pick up the stuff that Jen dropped, including a pile of college brochures. And I guess if Jen is deigning to sit with her, Joey is not one of these sucky girls that Jen was complaining about in therapy last week. So that's a feather in her cap, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Joey asks if these are for the colleges she got into, but Jen says they're all the ones she and Jack both got accepted to and that they now have to winnow them down. Jen says Jack is great at applying, which means he's ready for a career in civil service or education. When Jen asks, Joey says she hasn't heard from any colleges yet, meaning she's ready for a career in waitressing. But then a runner appears with a note for Joey to come to the administration office and call home. And Jen says it looks like Joey is wrong. And Dawson gets an identical note in his class and Jack gets his hopes up about what it means. So Joey and Dawson run into each other just in time for a kid we don't know to get apparently bad news about an envelope at home and stalk out dejectedly, as you can see in the visual aids. This poor anonymous guy, all we know about him is he's a failure.
I mean, I don't get this at all. I got my envelope like over a weekend and my mother was like calling around. I was out with my friend Carrie. My mother was calling around because it was a fat envelope.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't open it and would not have.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if I were at school, she would have just waited for me to get home, especially if it was a skinny envelope.
Right.
This is just not good parenting emotionally, in my opinion.
But the show is acting like this is very common because the secretary says she can't wait for April to be over and she wishes everyone's parents would just let them open their envelopes at home.
Yeah.
Send a note back with the kids. Knock the shit off. We have work to do. We can't just be answering your phone calls and sending for your kids all the time.
I think it may have been common at some schools, but it certainly was like not allowed at mine.
Regardless, the secretary hands Joey and Dawson each a phone, and when they wish each other luck and dial, clip two.
Mom, hey. Yeah, that's why I called. NYU Film, open it.
Hey, Bessie. No, I'm glad that you called. Finally came. Well, I don't think I can wait till I get home. Do you think you can read it to me?
I'm sorry, could you read that again? I don't think I understood.
No, it doesn't. It really says that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I heard, yeah. I understand. All right, gotta go.
I know what you did.
And you didn't get in.
Yeah, I would love to know how NYU phrased it so that Dawson could be like, I don't understand. We regret to inform you. It's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why he didn't get in. Anyway, as they walk out together, Joey is mopey about Dawson's rejection while he says that if their situations were reversed, she would be thrilled for him like he is for her. Pacey bounces up to join them and picks up on the weird cheese, so Dawson tells Joey to give Pacey the good news and orders her to celebrate. So Joey tells Pacey that while Dawson just found out NYU Film School rejected him, she got into Worthington, but hasn't even gotten the fictional school's whole fictional name out before he grabs her and swings her around. And the camera cuts to a long shot so we can see she's still wearing those ugly fucking boots I hate. It's been a whole season. I hate them. They're so ugly. When he puts her back down, she is still Joeying about it. Pacey reminds her that Dawson himself told her to celebrate. Joey says it's just surreal. Things like this don't happen to her. Pacey doesn't think she's going to believe she really got in until she actually sees the letter. And Joey bleats so they can't just cut. But what are they going to do? Asks Pacey. Not let her into college? I mean, probably not for that. So then we see Jen and Jack in an AV room with brochures and promotional VHS cassettes spread out all over the table.
Yeah.
Shout out physical media. Wonder where those videos are now. Apparently, the two of them have already watched all the videos because Jack refuses to screen the one from Cornell again. The handheld cinematography made him sick. Glad it's that. Not that he's that snotty about Cornell. Perfectly fine school, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
He's more compelled by the one with the Queenie prof talking about the Statue of Liberty, but he says they're wasting their time since there's really only one choice, the University of New York. And if it's good enough for Felicity and Ben, it's definitely good enough for their asses.
Yeah, they actually showed in like B-roll. Well, Carrie Russell was in it running up the front steps of Wine Hall, which is where my brother lived.
Yeah.
His freshman year at New York University, but they could have been a crossover series of events. Why not?
Yeah.
Might have improved this show.
It is strange that in this universe, there is both NYU for Dawson to be rejected from and also UNY. Where is it anyway? Jack reminds Jen she's already said New York is the only city worth living in, so they can just pick it and quit fucking around. But what if Jen told him she wasn't so sure anymore? Jack would say that someone needed to deal with her issues. Then Pacey and Joey go to the B&B where Bessie and her new cousin Oliver Hare, which you can see in the visual aids, give Joey a big hug. It's real bad. They trimmed the bangs a little bit for the next episode, I think, or one in a couple. Next time she comes back, it's not so bad. But here they really are. I mean, cousin Oliver is the best way to put it, in my opinion.
Yeah, or like Christy McNichol and cousin Oliver's hairs had a kid. I really like the color. That's an improvement, but it really does look like she walked past a window and someone dropped it on her.
Well, that's what her hair looks like when she says this. Clip three.
I am so proud of you. And mom would be too.
You also have a dad. Last we heard, he's still alive. I guess we're never going to see him again, so we're never going to hear about him again.
Yeah, I mean, they remember that in the next episode, but not here, which is, well, there's a lot of things they don't seem to understand about life as it's lived in this episode.
Thank you. We will get to it. I will be yelling. Pacey explains why they're home so early. When Bodhi goes to get the letter, Joey asks what they're interrupting. Bessie is planning a barbecue to celebrate the first Potter to get into college. As Bessie asks Joey whom she wants to invite, there is practically a spotlight on the box of Duncan Hines chocolate chip cookie mix on the kitchen counter. We see it in this episode. I don't think we see Alexander at all, but good for the cookies. No. Like, maybe put it in someone else's house if you're going to product place it. Bodhi's a chef. Doesn't really reflect well on him.
Yeah, if you're getting product placement money for that, maybe use that to send someone to college.
Bodhi returns with the letter and Joey's nervous to look at it, even though, as she says, she already had it read to her. Pacey says she's nervous because this makes it real, so she reads it aloud and wriggles around excitedly and does the tongue thing, and everyone's happy except me. Keep your tongue in your mouth. Over to the Leary house, where Dawson rushes to the door. When he passes Gail on the way, he scolds her for excessive walking in her condition, telling her to go knit something, and adds that she has to stop giving him the pitying mom look. She just wishes there were something she could do to take the sting off. Dawson insists that he's fine and opens the door to Gretchen, kissing her more than hello until Gretchen sees Gail's right there and awkwardly greets her. Gail is happy Gretchen's taking Dawson out to take his mind off things, and Dawson orders Gail out of the hall. Gretchen asks how he is really, and after he peeks down the hall to make sure Gail is too far away to hear, Dawson admits, it sucks. If he didn't get in at NYU, USC definitely won't want him either, he assumes. Gretchen says, first of all, one has no bearing on the other, and secondly, A.I. Brooks never went to film school and he did fine. Dawson says, is she saying he could use the money Mr. Brooks left him to make his own movies? Gretchen doesn't know why not. Dawson melts in relief, saying that 10 minutes ago he was miserable and she made him see the world as full of possibilities. Further kissing ensues. And then, in Tom's office, which Jen is now in four times a week, we learn, Jen fidgets uncomfortably on the couch before admitting she's having a problem with Jack. They had agreed to go to the same college, or at least colleges in the same city. Tom thinks it's good to have a support system in a foreign environment, but Jen says that's the thing. It wouldn't be foreign to her if they go to New York like Jack wants. Tom is obviously eager to talk about Jen's parents and wonders why Jen doesn't refer to them with the same sense of humor she does everything else, and asks when she talked to them last. Apparently there has not been any off-screen contact between Jen and her mother, because Jen says their last conversation was the Thanksgiving visit in season 3, and she straight up doesn't remember the last time she talked to her dad, not that she ever talked to him much even when they lived together. His way is to talk at or through or around you. Tom asks her to try to remember. Jen gets frustrated about being made to recall a conversation that meant nothing to her. But Tom says maybe it didn't at the time. It clearly means a lot to her now. And she fidgets on the couch and says she wants to go. And Tom thinks maybe she wants to stay and find out why this is so hard for her. I'm pretty sure she doesn't, but nice try. The next day, Joey has Pacey take a break from unloading 4 million charcoal briquettes from the car to note they haven't really talked about them yet. It's just weird for her to get her dream, she says. Pacey knows what she means, since he thinks that every time he looks at her. Joey tells him not to change the subject, but Pacey doesn't want to talk about anything negative today. He just wants to celebrate her. When Joey gets inside, there's a letter from the bursar's office. Bessie is eager to hear how much a full ride is, but clip four.
I don't know. According to this, Worthington is happy to have me, as long as my parents kick in $15,000.
$15,000? That can't be right. We don't have that kind of money.
I know that. I knew this was too good to be true. It's the universe's way of saying, Joey Potter, not so fast. I'm not going anywhere.
I don't think the university cares that much about you, honestly.
Yeah. I think the universe has probably done all the fucking with you it's gonna do. It made Dawson your first love. I think you're done.
Yeah.
Was not raised by university personnel, so I will let you hoot and holler about this if you like.
Yeah.
This is not how this works. Like, didn't you apply anywhere else that you knew would give you a full ride?
Yeah.
Didn't you think maybe you would have to take loans? Like, I was enormously fortunate. My pops paid for everything. Mm-hmm. Bless it. I'm sure he regrets it because look where I ended up. It's like, oh, you're not going to law school? Okay. Well, start paying me back. Like, fair. But there are so many ways around this, all of which this applicant would know, and her older sister would know, and her guidance counselor would know, and they would be underway.
Yes.
This is baffling.
So after the commercial, Joey and Bessie are in Ms. Watson's office, basically yelling at her as though Worthington's financial decisions are her fault. And the story is that because the B&B made so much more money in 2000 than it did in 1999, Worthington's determination is that the family can afford to pay some tuition, which is not the case because they have debts still. Ms. Watson says Joey can do what most people do these days and take out student loans. Joey immediately refuses. She says she can't graduate $60,000 in debt. Oh, sweetie, it won't be that by the time you're done paying it.
Yeah, no.
Joey states that she's waiting to hear from lots of other schools, and then we get this clip 5.
This is your dream, Joey.
Bessie, sometimes dreams don't always come true.
I'm going to pray Katie Holmes just fucked up the line, because sometimes don't always is not how a writer would write it. Boo.
No.
But I also feel like Ms. Watson would have more suggestions than just take out loans. Like, you can appeal decisions like this, and she would know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Like, the family income is not... this is not how this shit is calculated?
No.
I don't feel is A. B, you're right, you can appeal that. And C, there are approximately a gazillion local and county shortfall scholarships to make up differences like this, because this happens all the time.
A prestigious
university will be like, well, we'll get you like 2/3 of the way there, but the rest of it, you got to figure something out.
Right.
And so you get like 1500 here, 2500 there from like the whatever Union County Young Poets Association. Like, I'm making that up, but something like that did exist in my town. My mother did the bookkeeping for this organization. This is how people get it done.
Right.
I understand it's not good TV and it doesn't let Dawson ride in and save the day, but exhausting.
Well, the other thing is, even if the B&B made that much more money, that money would be in the company and they would be going on like whatever their income was that they declared as a household to the IRS, not what the business made. Like, unless they were taking out way more, whatever, dividends or something than they did the previous year, which they wouldn't have, because if they have debt, that all would still be in the company. Unless they're doing this all wrong, in which case, well, then Bessie, fuck you. Be mad at her, not Ms. Watson.
Well, and it's like mid-April, right? That's when these are going out. So they just filed their tax return. Like, does Worthington run the IRS and have a direct line to this information? This is all, like, if you're going to hand wave it, that is fine. This is a teen drama. Hand wave it. I beseech you. But, like, better, faster waving, please. Yes.
It only takes a couple of lines to explain the stuff away that we're we're mad about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So when Joey and Bessie get back to the house, Bessie sees Dawson outside and remembers they're having a celebratory barbecue for Joey's great success and says she will send everyone home. And with tears still on her cheeks, Joey orders Bessie not to do that and not to say anything about anything to anyone. Dawson is, of course, waiting with a congratulations cake, which Bessie takes inside. Dawson says Gretchen got sucked into the New York debate, but he skipped it since New York wanted nothing to do with him. And Joey makes a pained face. Dawson tells her she's acting weird around him again. That was a self-deprecating aside, and Joey has no reason not to be happy right now. He asks how it went with Ms. Watson. Pacey said something about a mix-up, and Joey says it was great and races away from him while he watches her quizzically. And inside, she swerves a kiss from Pacey and tells him the cruel irony of her situation. Clip 6.
There's got to be something you can do about that.
Uh-huh. There's nothing to be done. Except go out there and celebrate this amazing accomplishment that I worked so hard for.
I mean, if they just wanted a reason for Katie Holmes to cry a lot, I get it, because she is very good at it. Mm-hmm. Like, that line almost got me until I remembered, like, no, you should know what your next step is. This is not the end.
Also, just send everybody home. Who cares?
Yes. Yes.
They all walked here. And you are, in universe, the absolute worst actor. Unable to hide this stuff and act normal.
Yes.
I don't know why nobody ever catches on, but they don't. Mm-hmm. It's just so, I don't know.
Well, people do. It's just, it's only Dawson. And that's the reason where it's like, that's your, I didn't get into Worthington face, whatever. Like, he's the one who can tell.
Totally.
What her different moods are. Anyway, Pacey tells her to wait, but Joey says it is what it is and no one can change it. I would just add, even if you didn't appeal it, which you can, you could probably find a job that would earn you $5,000 in a summer, even back then, and graduate with a manageable amount of debt. Or Bessie could take out a line of credit against the business that you could pay off as you go. Or Gretchen probably has direct experience with this economy, or if she doesn't, knows people who do. Like, talk to people who know about this shit. You might get some tips that you couldn't find on your own, which, you know, this should have been part of your research.
People who are pulling for you in the Worthington alumni dinner community will also have some back channels for you. Like, my dad couldn't afford Amherst, but they would pay him to play basketball. Hilarious. For a year. And then he painted every fucking house in the 215.
Yeah.
And that's how he did it. I mean, of course, you know, college was $2,800 a year.
Sure.
But still.
Yeah. Every summer that I was in college, I had two jobs minimum. And I was on tuition waiver, but I was still trying to make money because you need money in life. Mm-hmm. Outside, Jack and Jen are debating about New York. He thinks the public transit system is a huge plus, but Jen snits that he's speaking as someone who's never been groped on the subway. Gretchen says she hates New York, and Dawson says she's speaking as a very loyal girlfriend. Joey joins them, and Jen toasts, "May Worthington be worthy of Joey." Gretchen notices Pacey looking stressed by the grill and quickly excuses herself to go help him. When she's gone, Jen starts picking a fight with Jack about how insensitive he's being about her sensitivities, as she puts it. He never used to be like that. He says she never used to talk like a lunatic either. Jen pouts that she's going to go get a burger. Jack says she doesn't even eat them, and Jen shoots back that she's going to get it, not eat it. Not really beating the lunatic allegations, although after this long friendship, Jack should know not to engage when she's like this, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. At the grill, Gretchen makes sure Pacey's okay with all this college talk. He tries to change the subject to his cooking, but Gretchen won't let him put her off and says he must be worried about the future. Pacey's worried about Joey's future. He doesn't really have one to think of. Gretchen says he's the only one who thinks that, and if he keeps saying it, it'll happen, but what does he want? He tries to throw the question back at her, but she asked him first. Pacey makes her promise not to repeat what he's about to tell her, and then, clip 7.
Joey's not going to Worthington. They denied a financial aid package. She's just too proud to tell anybody about it.
That's awful.
Yeah, and it gets worse, actually.
How can it?
I think I'm happy about it.
Okay, fine. But she's not, apparently she did apply other places. So she's going to end up going somewhere.
Yeah.
Also, you get in and then you have like 2 months to let them know what you're going to do.
Yes.
I get that everybody is 17, but you've got to calm down. Mm-hmm. They would know all this stuff too.
Yes.
We old ladies should not be reminding them of how it works, but okay. Yes.
Also, the other places that she got in that might give her full ride are probably further away than Boston, so he shouldn't be happy about this at all. This is probably the best case scenario if she goes there.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jack is taking my note and joining Jen on the dock, saying he's pretty sure that fight wasn't really about his alleged lack of sensitivity. Jen reminds him of when he moved in with her and Grams and how he said he didn't want to go home because there wasn't anything there for him. That's how she feels about New York. Jack knows she has issues with her parents, but it's not like she would be living with them. Jen can't really explain it, but she's afraid to go back. Jack thought this was one of the things she was going to work out with Tom, but she says that when Tom tried, she just changed the subject to one of her other neuroses. Jack firmly says if she doesn't want to go to New York, they won't. It's more important to him that they go somewhere together. But he also tells her to go back to therapy and work her shit out, and they hug, and it's cute. This was a nice scene, I thought. I like when they get along.
Yeah.
And then Gail and Mitch show up with congratulations for Joey and a fat envelope for Dawson from USC. Dawson freezes for a second, even though, as he says, the size immediately makes it seem more promising. And sure enough, he is accepted. Joey slips away without anyone noticing except the people who knew about her financial aid. Though after Dawson has hugged his parents and Gretchen and accepted a manly handshake from Pacey, Joey is the first person Dawson wants to see, and he finds her inside crying, which she doesn't cover quickly enough for him not to notice. She congratulates him, but he says she's a wreck and asks what's wrong. She tells him what happened, and clip 8.
Joey, there's got to be a way around this. It's just money. You can't let that stop you from achieving something you've worked this hard for.
I don't think Joey wants to hear it's only money from the kid who is driving around in a brand new Jeep. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whose mom was an anchor woman and
and had enough money to open a restaurant on a lark. But what Joey says is that Dawson's making it sound like there's some easy answer, and there isn't. She did hours of research before she even applied, in which case she should have read about appeals, and getting financial aid was as important to her as her acceptance. We watch Dawson have an epiphany, which you can see in the visual aids, and then ask if Worthington is what she wants. Joey says it doesn't matter what she wants, but when he presses her, she says it is. In that case, he wants her to have Mr. Brooks's money or enough of it to get her to school. Joey reflexively refuses. Mr. Brooks willed that money to Dawson, but Dawson says he willed it to him to do something great, and giving it to Joey would be. Dawson implores her not to say no until she's really thought about it. She doesn't refuse, so he walks out and leaves her in her puddle. And this is going to be another situation like Dylan's money, right? Where we never find out how much he was left.
I think it was an even 100 grand. We're also never really going to find out how it works that Dawson, who as far as I know is still not 18, can like even make plans for this money. Like,
right.
Mr. Brooks's lawyer has some splaining to do.
Yeah, I feel like even if Mr. Brooks put all his affairs very well in order before he took an overdose of pills, this all, like, he wouldn't have the money to give yet.
No.
All right. We agree.
Yep.
Sometime later, Joey goes to Dawson's and loiters in his empty room, looking at his framed photos of all his friends. Dawson returns and comments that there aren't any of the two of them, which they need to do something about. Joey says she really, really thought about his offer, but she can't accept. She would never be able to pay him back. Dawson quickly says she wouldn't have to, but she says she would. Even if it were hundreds and not thousands of dollars, it would ruin their friendship. Dawson says that if their friendship has survived the previous summer, it can survive anything, but Joey doesn't think it could survive this. Dawson just can't stand the idea of her not getting something she wants as much as an education from Worthington when he has seen her go through so much pain in her life, and then says even before her mom got sick or her dad, and then he trails off, which, okay, at least he remembers that she has one.
Thank you.
But what other pain did Joey go through before her mother got sick and her dad went to prison, like wearing hand-me-downs? That's kind of the story. There is a more to it that we know. Joey snaps at him not to feel sorry for her, but Dawson says he's never been able to fix any of that undefined pain before, but this he can. He just needs her to let him. Joey says she can't, so he should just let her thank him and go. And back at therapy, Jen says she's ready to talk about the last time she saw her dad, except she can't actually remember what the conversation was. Tom asks if there was someone else there who could help her remember, like her mother or her former boyfriend. Ooh, if you think we're going to see Billy, don't get too excited. He's gone. But Tom suggests maybe Jen spent time with someone else who could fill in the blanks, and she looks very perturbed at the thought. Over to the Junior Witter house. When Dawson shows up, Pacey says he just missed Gretchen, but Dawson is there to see him. He correctly assumes Joey told Pacey about the money, and when Dawson asks his thoughts, Pacey says it's a lot of money to give with no strings attached, and they go on clip 9.
She deserves to go to Worthington, Pacey. You know that as well as anyone else. She deserves more than...
What? More than me?
That's not what I said, and it's not what I meant. Pacey. She's been fighting for a school like Worthington since the second we got into high school. Against enormous odds, against people who've been writing her off simply because of her father. And she did it. I mean, she beat the odds. She got in. And I can't stand to sit back and watch her lose it all over something as stupid as money. I don't think you can either. Can you see her being happy anyplace else?
No. I can't.
So you can see this in the visual aids. Pacey is giving Dawson a classic, like, Brandon Walsh flat loathing look until the end of that when he blinks and it sort of washes away as we see he is more concerned that Joey go to school than he is at trying to best Dawson. It's very nice piece of acting, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also would like someone to tell Pacey to go see Tom because he's clearly very depressed. Like, when you're saying things like, I have no future, people should not blow past that. And clearly something big is going on with him, and save Pacey. He needs help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jen finds Drew at the yacht club, and after some pro forma snarking and her sighing that he's not going to make this easy for her, she asks him to tell her what happened on their last night together in New York. Drew scoffs until he realizes she actually can't remember, and clip 10.
Well, you invited me over because your horrible parents were sending you away. We began at my place, where we emptied out my pop's liquor cabinet and picked up some good stuff in Washington Square Park before heading back to your deluxe apartment in the sky. Now, if I remember correctly, we got particularly comfy on the sofa, heard keys in the door, and hid in your room where you continued to ravage me. It's quite mind-blowing, especially the part when your mother walked in and joined us.
You're repulsive, you know that? Why are you doing this?
Why are you? The past is past, Lindley. Just let it be.
Well, I'd like to, all right, but I can't. I just need to know what happened. Will you please tell me?
You know what? I haven't worked through it yet.
You know, I thought that maybe just once you'd be able to help me out here. I guess I was wrong.
Hey, it happens.
Okay. I mean, here's the thing. Mark Matkovich is actually doing some nice business here, but the writing is completely mired in him being boy Abby Morgan.
Yep.
And doesn't seem to remember, like, his backstory either. So he kind of has nothing to work with. And because this is all a big buildup to this reveal of whatever Jen is, like, stuffing because of trauma, he's just sort of spare parts in the scene, kind of. But I just wanted to say, like, given the nothing burger that he has motivations wise, he's doing pretty well. Like, he's clearly not comfortable, and something, like, he's drawing on something as an actor.
Yeah.
It's just not, like, the focal point of the scene, and the writing isn't helping him.
Well, it's also the same problem that we were talking about with the class couple incident, which is, like, what is his motivation? What does he want from any of these people?
What is this retcon where they were, like, in each other's daily lives before she left for New York? It's like the thing about Dylan, like, getting a girl pregnant in France or whatever, that it's like, let's think about the timeline here. He was, like, 13 then when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't think this stuff through.
No. So as Jen stomps off, though, Drew looks like he immediately wishes he hadn't been such a cock to her, which sets up another scene yet to come. And then Pacey finds Joey sitting outside the B&B and says he could still sell a kidney. Joey says it's not funny. Bitch, at this point, you kind of got to laugh, you know? Like, get over yourself. You're not dying.
Yeah.
Joey has been thinking that she'll just stay in Capeside for a year. Then she can declare herself financially independent and apply again. You know what? Another perfectly reasonable plan. Sounds good. She could also definitely save at least $15,000 living at home and working for a year, including at the high season at the yacht club. Not this, like, in the starting in the fall bullshit that we've been seeing this year. But Pacey kneels in front of her, underlining the subtext that she is the queen of the town, and he's humbling himself in front of her and says she cannot delay a year. Joey says it's just a year. Pacey says it's not. It never is, especially in a town like this. Time will keep passing, and then she'll look up and see she has lived a fraction of the life she was meant to. Relax.
Yeah. She's not stepping into a time machine.
No.
Settle down.
But he says that's not going to happen to Joey. Neither of them wants it to, and neither does Dawson. And then Jen is opening the door to Drew, but not letting him slide. He repeats her line about not making this easy for him and says he's trying to apologize and tell her the truth, which is she was wasted that night, and he was shocked that she brought him back to her place, given what he knew had just happened with her and Billy. She knew he kind of liked her, and she waited for him to make a move, which he did, clumsily. And they hadn't gotten very far when her parents came home. Clip 11.
And my dad?
Your dad
Your dad was furious. You guys just started going at it. He called you a slut. You called him a hypocrite. Just as it started getting interesting, he tossed my ass.
So that's it? You don't know what else we were fighting about?
No. You made it perfectly clear that it wasn't about us. Nothing that night was about us.
I used you to provoke him, didn't I? Oh, God, that's why I didn't want to talk about it.
No worries. I just figured you were a lesbian or something.
I wish. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I used you.
Apology accepted.
I thought that was pretty good.
This role is like three quarters of a dimension. He's giving it more than it probably deserves. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Drew doesn't suck, but good episode for Mankiewicz, yeah. I would say.
Dawson's farting around on his Sony Vaio computer when Joey and her underlip scab can see it in the visual aids.
No. Oh, get please. Between people having colds and people having cold sores, uh-huh. Like just give everybody a day and some zinc and come back tomorrow.
Anyway, Joey and the scab appear in the doorway. From her expression, Dawson assumes that Pacey wasn't able to convince her to take his money either. But in fact, she's there to tell him the true answer to his very personal question a couple of episodes back. She and Pacey did sleep together on the ski trip. Dawson manages not to start sobbing, but he does slowly sit as she keeps talking. Clip 12.
I wanted to tell you the truth, Dawson, but after all the time we spent together just walking and talking, I mean, it's like things are right between us again, and it was better than I ever thought it ever could be. So when you asked me that question, I don't know, I thought that you wouldn't understand.
So you never gave me a chance to understand?
I know I should have told you the truth, Dawson. I know it wasn't fair of me to let you go on thinking that things were still the same, that
I was the most important person in your life.
I mean, I hope you didn't, because she's been going out with another guy for like a year.
Yeah, and you assumed that they fucked on the boat, which they should have, and you never should have asked that question and apologized for asking it already, so maybe we could just leave this at the curb. Please, finally.
But there's a tiny bit more. Clip 13.
All I can say is I never wanted to hurt you.
All right. Don't go back to that, Dawson, that we hate. Please.
No, please. Like, this conversation should not be happening. He has no right to any feelings around this, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But, or whatever, he can have feelings. He doesn't really get to talk about them with her anymore.
Yeah.
This is dumb. Mm-hmm. But you almost feel for him in this scene because they really have pulled him back into the realm of protagonist and viewers actually caring about his feelings a little.
Yep. At her next therapy session, Jen is annoyed that all her investigation only uncovered that she and her dad fought, not what they fought about. Tom says that when she's ready to know, it will come to her. Jen guesses that when she does remember, it will give her a new reason to hate her parents. But when he asks, she admits she actually thinks she's in therapy to stop hating her parents. Tom says it's not that, it's to stop hating herself. Clip 14.
See, when you act out at the age that you did, when you have sex in your parents' bed at 12 years old, when you abuse liquor and drugs before you're even old enough to drive, yes, you're doing it as a cry for love. Yes, you're doing it because something robbed you of your childhood in a way that you'll be angry about for a long time. But the reason you keep acting out, the reason you stayed on a self-destructive path is not because you blame your father for what happened. It's because you blame yourself. That's why you don't want to remember. As long as you don't, you'll keep telling yourself that whatever happened is your fault. And you'll keep acting out, and you'll keep robbing yourself of life's greatest moments until you prove yourself right. But you're wrong. Jennifer, you are a beautiful, innocent young woman who's meant to shine in this world in ways you can't even begin to fathom. And I'm here to help you see that.
Do therapists usually monologue like that? It's like a lot.
Yeah, that seemed like it was crossing a line. Not to mention that the locution in ways you can't begin to fathom. Please put it in the back of the freezer, writers. You're using it in every episode and I can't. But that's still a really good speech. Good job, Rob Nagel. Like, once it gets up to the end of, like, I'm your biggest fan. Like, well, no, that's not the therapist's job. Mm-hmm. But this is clearly laying the groundwork for a revelation that we 100% do not actually get.
We sure don't.
I'm not saying we should have either. I'm glad somebody blinked, or that someone at the network was like, the truth, you can't handle the truth, which, But listing it out like this, like, it is clear where they want us to think this is going.
Yeah.
So I would love to know why it didn't. I assume my theory is correct.
Or they, you know, they only had Rob Nagel for four episodes and were like, okay, we can't have this be the end of it because a child sexual abuse revelation takes more untangling than what the story actually ends up being.
Maybe, but I feel like they could have adjusted for that. It's a very weird, this is why I don't think I totally understand what happened, that the fact that she can't remember it, that there was trauma, that she was, I mean, they act like she could give meaningful consent at 12 while drunk, which, no. But that aside, it's like, okay, this is a trauma response. We all live in the world. What blank are we filling in here? And then they just didn't do it. I can't imagine that it was to do with Nagel's contract, but who knows? Yes. Maybe they, because, you know, as we'll see, he's not really used that much post the revelation. So
yeah, not at all. That's his last episode. Joey pulls up at the Junior Witter house and sits with Paisley on a chaise outside. He asks if they're going to Worthington and Joey says no. She did, however, tell Dawson something he needed to hear. Paisley guesses what it was, and Joey says she doesn't know why she lied, which she didn't know he knew about, as far as we know. I guess he's been through this kind of shit so many times already, he doesn't have the energy to be mad about it this time, saying the important thing is...
That was my interpretation, yeah.
He says the important thing is that Joey's told the truth now, and by the way, during the scene, his mouth twitches in a way that makes his dimple come out and remind me how little this poor boy has been smiling lately. It's sad.
Yeah.
And the next thing he admits is that as happy as he was hearing that she'd gotten into Worthington, he was just as happy hearing that she wasn't going to go. Clip 15.
It's not that I don't want you to be able to go off and realize your dreams, Joey, because I do. But for the first time, I felt like it wasn't me that was holding you back from them.
Casey, you've never held me back. You have to stop thinking like that.
I could stop thinking like that if you just promise me one thing. That if the day ever comes, and you know, it may come much sooner than either one of us think, but if that day ever come where you did feel like I was holding you back, just promise me that you'd cut me loose, yeah?
Casey.
Promise me that.
I won't promise you that. You're asking me to promise to let you go.
How would he be holding her back? This makes no sense.
Yeah. Also, everyone around you is also the same age. Like, I don't think anybody assumes one way or the other about high school relationships lasting or not lasting. Like, everybody has the same delusions about it until you get to, like, Thanksgiving break. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or so I have read in my own diary from a gazillion years ago.
Then we're in Jen's room as she and Jack stare at a goldfish in a bowl. Tom recommended it as a memory exercise, kind of like self-hypnosis. Jen is hoping this will help her remember the conflict between herself and her dad, allowing her to forgive them both and allow her and Jack to go to school in New York if that's what they decide they want. Jack says it's only since Jen started seeing Tom that he's thought she was at all crazy. And Jen tells him if he wants to go to school in New York, he should just shut up and watch the fish. So they do. And when Joey gets home, she's surprised to see Dawson waiting on the end of her dock, given their last conversation. Clip 16.
I think you underestimate me. I think we underestimate each other. What I'm trying to say, Joey, is that what you felt the other night at the movie theater, that something was finally right between us, I felt that too. And nothing will ever change that. Not going to school on different coasts, not meeting people who are meant to love forever, nothing. I want you to have this.
It's a check.
But Dawson...
I don't know how I feel about you sleeping with Pacey. I don't know how I'll feel tomorrow or next week or next year for that matter, but I'm absolutely certain that giving you this is the right thing to do. Because I'm certain about us and what we mean to each other. And I think you are too.
Okay, I guess. I would have liked to see one conversation with his parents about this. Like, it's a pretty big decision to make on your own at the age of, as far as we know, 17. I guess it's April. He's 18 now. We just didn't have a birthday. But still, if it was $100,000, then 15 isn't that much to give away, I suppose.
Yeah, and it would have been put in a trust. And he's come so far. Don't give him that line about, like, I don't know how I feel about you sleeping with Pacey. Like, right. Nobody fucking cares how you feel. Right. Write it in your gurnal.
God. The end of the scene is him saying Joey's going to have some of the best years of her life at Worthington, and Dawson wants to hear all about them. Just a reminder, she'll have some bad nights too, and one of the real bad ones is Downtown Crossing, which I just remembered still ahead of us. Ooh,
no.
Anyway, that's it for this episode. Let's close up with our MVP. I think it's got to be Dawson. This was a pretty nice thing to do, and he really intended to keep doing it and insist on it and not be a bitch and withdraw it just because she had sex with someone else. So good for him.
Yeah, I'll allow that. And especially since he didn't get what he wanted, and so he's laboring under some other disappointments as well. That's a solid choice. I'm going to go with Drew. Or specifically Mark Matkovich, because who knows what they're trying to do or not do with this character, but he's giving it some depth that is probably not on the page. And under the circumstances in the Jen storyline, I think he's doing well.
I agree. Least valuable player. Ms. Watson, be better at your job.
Yeah, Cape Side High's administrative structure was my answer, and I'm sticking with it. Next time on Again With This, Jolie and Jen face the past in New York, Gretchen and Dawson catch a flat in state, and Pacey and Drew get served. You might need hard liquor to face the aughts fashions in our visual aids. We do them for every episode of the podcast, and you can find them and the aforementioned every episode at our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. Hook up that modem and come on by. I am emotional support carp, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Contrivance University bursar, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And I think you underestimate our producer, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
You want your bun toasted? Oh, great.